land chilling, land mines, child recruitment, arbitrary detention, enforced disappearance, torture, attacks on schools, on hospitals, and a very wide range of other violations that has been committed by all warring parties in Yemen. We used to have in Yemen an independent mechanism formed by the UN, specifically by the Human Rights Council, called the Group of Eminent Experts, that it was the only independent mechanism that investigate in these violations. Unfortunately, in 2021, the Saudis just put all of the sticks and carrots to terminate the mandate of this investigative body, and currently Yemen doesn't have any UN or international investigative body to investigate on those crimes. And this didn't only stop the investigations and the reporting on the violations of Saudis, but it stops all the reporting and violations on Saudis, Houthis, STC, and other warring parties in Yemen.
And finally, how will a peace process move forward that you think could stick, that you think would hold all sides accountable, Ali?
Yeah. Any peace that doesn't has accountability, transitional justice, reparations, truth-telling, is just a political agreement that can fall at any time. If we're really looking into a long-lasting, durable peace, we should really take the issues of accountability, transitional justice, also reparations to victims, and truth-telling into considerations.
Ali Jamil, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Yemeni human rights advocate and accountability and redress director of Matana for Human Rights, visiting New York City from Sana'a, Yemen. That does it for our show. I'm speaking at two events this weekend. On Saturday, on April 22nd in Troy, New York, at a celebration of the Sanctuary for Independent Media, 7 p.m. And on Sunday, I'll be in Boston giving the 10th Annual Dorothy Day Lecture at Emmanuel College at 1 p.m. For all details, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Pels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maritia Hussaina, Tammy Warren, Afterina Ndura, Sam Alkofte, Marie Asti, Jujun Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sanji Lopez, Dennis Moynihan. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org, where community grows.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
For me, although it's been really challenging, knowing how this all took place also has felt healing. And I think hopefully, you know, this, and we have worked really hard as a core team to bring this information to light so that it can be a collective healing.
Buju, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, co-primo, Meek Gwaich, for joining us today. Native Lights is, at its core, a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every single week, we have wonderful conversations with great guests from a whole mess of different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, community leaders, healthcare advocates, educators, just
a whole chamess.
Yeah, just a big chamess. And most of these great people have a wonderful mixture of passions, and we talk to them about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community, centering around, you know, finding purpose in our lives and amplifying Native voices. So we're doing that again. How you doing, Leah?
Doing great. Hanging in there, upright, smiling. How about you?
Same, you know, just, you know, what I like about this show is, personally for me, and hopefully for the listener, is that every episode I'm learning something new through our guests and, you know, their amazing perspective. And I remember one of our recent, somewhat recently, Tad Johnson came on. He was recently appointed as the University of Minnesota's onto the University of Minnesota's Board of Regents. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, you know, researching for that interview and, you know, coming upon him talking about the Minnesota windfall and land grabs from the University of Minnesota. And it's crazy to me that certain things, you know, that happened in our state's history, didn't necessarily learn that going to the, you know, in our education system, in my education system.
Because you went to the University of Minnesota.
I went to the University of Minnesota. And it's just kind of weird because I think in general, history of our state and, you know, the interactions of government and agencies with Indigenous people been very lacking for me, at least. And just to hear, you know, some of that history was pretty eye-opening to me. And I bring it up because our guest today worked on a big project that looked into not only land grabs from the University of Minnesota, but other ways that the University of Minnesota impacted Indigenous peoples.
And the University of Minnesota is just one of many land grant slash grab, we'll talk more about that, universities in the United States.
Exactly. So that brings us, you know, to our guest today, who's done a lot of work in that field, Misty Blue. Misty Blue is a White Earth Nation citizen who grew up in the Twin Cities, and she was recently appointed by the Minnesota, Indian Affairs Council to be the coordinator of the Truth Project, which is short for Towards Recognition and University Tribal Healing. The report, which has since been released as of this recording, was released last week. It critically examined the University of Minnesota's impact on Indigenous people in our state, and we'll certainly be diving into that report, what it found, what steps are being taken now. But we also want to learn more about Misty as a person in general and just, you know, what brought her into this work. In addition to the Truth Project, Misty Blue is also the Evaluation Program Manager at Grassroots Solutions, a Minneapolis consulting agency that's committed to building healthy, just, and equitable communities, unquote. So just a lot to cover. I know she's done a lot of research on many different things. We'll cover as much as we can. And here she is. Bonjour, Misty.
Bonjour. My name is Misty Blue. I am a member of the White Earth Nation. I have descendancy also through Chinchayapi, Lower Sioux Indian community. I'm calling in today from Minneapolis, where I live.
Misty, we like to kick off our conversations by seeing what's on the top of your mind. Is there anything that you're just like bursting to get out?
I think the reverberating theme this week has been, we're just so happy that this information is finally out there. And finally, this issue is, you know, getting the visibility it is. People are resonating with our work far and wide, and that means a lot to us. You know, we've been working on this project for at least a year and a half, I think even more than that for some members of our teams.
Well, as long as we're on that subject, let's get into it. Let's talk about the Truth Project, but before we get into the findings, could you talk, you know, just about how it started and what the project wanted to research and accomplish?
I think there's two impetus for this project. The first being the High Country News article that mapped land that was expropriated through the Morrill Act. And that was in 2020, they published that. And at the same year, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council published a series of resolutions for, you know, kind of calling on the university to be better relatives with tribes and with tribal members here in the state of Minnesota. Those were sort of the impetus of this. Tad Johnson, who is now Regent Tad Johnson, was the office that sort of responded to the call from MIAC, and him and Ann Gargiola, as a research assistant, sort of, like I said, responded and started to think about the issue of university tribal relations. They wrote a grant proposal and it was funded. And that's when sort of all of this started. I started in the summer of 2021 as the project coordinator for the Truth Project, and When I started, I was appointed by the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. And so my role really has been to interface with tribes and to be sort of that liaison between the tribes and the institution.
Well, Misty, can you lay a bit of the foundation for the research? Can you talk a little bit about the Morrill Act and what is a land grab or land grant university?
Yeah, so the Morrill Act is a congressional act signed in 1862 by President Lincoln, and it essentially, you know, granted land to universities for the greater good. And there's been actually a series of land grant congressional acts, but this one was by far the largest. And the University of Minnesota, you know, was the recipient of that and has received more land and also accumulated more wealth from those land grabs. In addition to the congressional acts, you know, state treaties help to move land from under the stewardship of Indigenous people to the stewardship of the university, and then they were able to choose what to do with that land. So in the case of the University of Minnesota, you know, there was land sales. The land was also leased for mining and just the mineral rights are leased at that point. And the university then is able to use those profits to establish itself.
So it's not just like being able to get land and then profit off of it for just like money, but also being able to take natural resources from it.
Correct. So things like iron ore, timber was a big one. The Cloquet Forestry Center has been, you know, you'll be able to read that piece in our report, but that's one of the main avenues that timber was sold. Taconite, mineral leasing, those are the ones that come to mind. Those are the big ones.
You're listening to Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Misty Blue, White Earth Nation citizen who was appointed by the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council to be the coordinator for the Truth Project, which critically examines the University of Minnesota's impact on Indigenous people in the state.
What was striking for me is that, you know, there's not only these land grabs, but there's also revisionist history. Can you talk about how that's involved in this?
Sure. So when an institution becomes a land grant university, a land grab university, you know, it's sort of a special history that's touted as like, you know, for the greater good. It's, you know, they're allowed special privileges and able to operate with not a lot of checks and balances, and because it's people sort of don't question that. And so what really gets covered up when we use the term land grant is the violence behind the land transfers and also the way that the wealth is accumulated and then not redistributed back to the communities, right? And so if you look at our history as Indigenous people here in Minnesota, like there's been a disruption of lifeways. And so that has really had implications for health and well-being as well. If we think about current social determinants of health, that all plays a role when wealth and access to resources has not been made available for our people.
And you mentioned Tad Johnson, who is past guest on the show, actually. And he enlightened me to some of what we're talking about today. Can you talk about the U of M's response? I know he's part of the U of M, you know, Board of Regents, but how has the U of M's response been so far to this report?
So, you know, Tad Johnson, he led the Office of Tribal Nations Relations prior to being a regent. And so he was able to, you know, have leadership for our project and be that interface with Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. So very supported, very well respected in the community. He, you know, has a long history of serving our tribal nations as, you know, council, legal counsel. And so it was imperative that he was a part of this project, because when we were coming out to, or going out to the different tribes to kind of raise awareness around this issue And my role really was to build a strong research team that was completely, that was Native, all Native research team. It was great to have him there to show that, you know, people trusted him. He was appointed as regent last summer, and so, you know, has not been able to be part of the project since then. But our report has, first we hosted a symposium in May of 2022, where we did invite leadership from the University of Minnesota to first hear the findings in a conversational space. Like, we really wanted to open a conversation and say, you know, this is what we're finding. This is what we, you know, what can we do with this? What do you all want to do with this? You know, we had a number of tribal leaders in attendance, both in person and on. It was a hybrid event by invitation only. We invited a lot of leadership from the university. There wasn't a response after that. So I don't. So that was like the first. I guess that was sort of the first non-response, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Then we wrote the report. We just released it last week, and the university has released official statement, but we have, our team has not been contacted yet by any university leadership.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Misty Blue, White Earth Nation citizen, who was appointed by the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council to be the coordinator for the Truth Project, which critically examined the University of Minnesota's impact on Indigenous people in the state.
How do you feel doing this work? And I would ask this to anybody, because this is historical and present day, an ongoing trauma.
Yeah, I feel, it feels unsettling a lot of times, because we have encountered a lot of really troubling things in the archive. And I think that a part of us, or I'll speak for myself, a part of me has known the violence in our history, but to see the mechanisms through which the violence has happened has been shocking. So we, and Anna and Adriana can speak to this as well, of course. So our research core team was me, Misty Blue, Adriana Goodwin, and Anne Gargiola. We have worked together in different ways to bring this project from start to finish. But, you know, we were able to examine letters, correspondence between regents. We were able to examine maps and ledgers to see the way that first the maps will talk about trees as pine forests, but then once they make it to ledgers, they're talking about like acres of timber, right? So like, there's like a process of where things sort of get commodified. So I think it's those things. Number one, like, we can see the violence. Number two, we can see the way that this land and all of the beings here become objects and become commodified. That has been very challenging for me. I also feel very proud to do this work. I like to talk about it as sort of trauma and generational trauma. If I refer back to the book of My Grandmother's Hands by Rezma Manikim, and he talks about trauma as forgetting. So trauma asks us to forget. And part of that healing is to remember and to contextualize. And so for me, although it's been really challenging, knowing how this all took place also has felt healing. And I think hopefully, you know, this, and we have worked really hard as a core team to bring this information to light so that others can also start to, it can be a collective healing. You know, we were very intentional about the process of this. So I've spoken a little bit about, you know, our intentions during this. We knew it was going to be a challenging, and we knew it was going to be contentious. And so we wanted to we wanted to make sure that our process of conducting this type of research, also we were able to mitigate some of that secondary trauma. So we were, first of all, we did it collaboratively. We were all sort of in this together, me, Anne, and Adriana, but also the tribal research fellows. So those are the people who joined our project, one from each tribe. And we were, you know, held weekly sessions so that we could talk things out between each other. We had an elder, Lemoyne Lapointe, to come and facilitate some sessions with us to offer emotional and spiritual healing as a collective. We also advocated for more funding to be able to offer one-on-one talk therapy for people who wanted to have that resource for them to also sort of bolster them while they were going through this as well. So those are some of the ways that we've tried to take care of our hearts and spirits while we're going through this.
Thank you for sharing that, Misty. I appreciate it.
So what's next? What are the steps being taken now after this report has been released?
Right now, we're very surprised by all of the support that we've received. Not that we didn't, like I mentioned at the beginning, this has gone far and wide. Like, people have heard about this, I think, nationally and internationally now. And so we want to continue to work with the tribes to see how they would like to be supported. We would like to bring more of the stories that are within the 500-page report out. We would like to expand on those. You know, we were able to look at various angles of university tribal relations. So each tribal research fellow conducted their own tribally-based, place-based research study on a topic of their choosing. And, you know, people chose different things. There was something about the Kolke Forestry Center. There was a project around dams. There was a project around like burial mounds, some NAGPRA failures. I think all of those deserve more time to, I guess, be known for people to know about this issue. So that's one thing that we know for sure we want to continue to do. I also, you know, we think it's important for others to propagate their own projects from this as it intersects with their own work, right? So it's not just, I think, researchers who could benefit from this, but I think, you know, legislators, you know, DNR, other universities, a lot of people, I think, have stake in this. And so it's important to continue to dig, to learn more, but also to act. And so we're hoping that the university can act on some of our recommendations.
There's a good list, including reparations in perpetuity, representation, commitment to education as individual and self and tribal self-determination. What do these mean as far as being recommendations and reparations?
So we asked all of the tribes that we worked with what they think that the university should do. We, as an internal team, also, given the research that we were uncovering, also asked ourselves that question. And these are sort of the, when you roll it all up to high level, these are the recommendations that we landed on. They're big, and I think they can be broken down into actionable steps. I'd like to see that. So we have land back. I mean, that's one thing the university is already considering right now with the Kolke Forestry Center. It's in, I think it's in legislation or in legislative session to figure out the specifics of that piece, but that is something that we've asked the Board of Regents to commit to. Reparations in perpetuity, this, you know, this is really related to the Permanent University Fund. So as I mentioned, the sales, the land sales that happened at, you know, that wealth transfer moment, aka when land was expropriated, all of that, those sales were then moved into a fund, the Permanent University Fund, where it has to stay on the books in perpetuity. That revenue has been able to accumulate interest and accumulate over time and become bigger. And so we've asked that the university commit to annual investment returns of the Permanent University Fund be diverted to Native Americans in perpetuity. Representation is the fourth recommendation that we had, and that really means we want to see Native people at the university, you know, making sure that, you know, staff and students are recruited and retained, but also that, you know, Native people are allowed to lead as well. The university, the fifth one is commitment to education as individual and tribal self-determination. So the university recently created the promise waiver, and that is, it was enacted, I think, it was announced in November 2021, and that is a tuition waiver for Native students. And unfortunately, right now, it is a needs-based scholarship and not an affinity-based scholarship tuition waiver. And so I think that the university could go an extra step and create the affinity-based tuition waiver for that piece. And also, you know, Dakota people were exiled from Minnesota, and so the tuition waiver only covers students who currently reside here or current members of tribal nations within the state. So that fails to include people who were exiled from the state. So there's a couple of steps that could be broadened. The next piece is around Indigenous research policies. You know, a lot of what we uncovered in the archives, we did see like medical experiments on a Native people, and just, I think, harmful research practices that even by today's standards, like, are not appropriate. And so enacting new research policies would hopefully prevent and mitigate some of that harm. And again, there's a lot to learn here. So definitely adopting future research is important to this.
Yeah. How did you go about this with researching? I know it's really important to have Native researchers as the main drivers of this.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I was really set up for success in the way that the grant was written, but I, some of the pieces were that we really wanted to ensure data sovereignty. So that meant writing out contracts with the tribes that, you know, when whatever they research their data and whatever's produced, the report is then their intellectual property versus becoming the property of the university. It was also important that there weren't, within those contracts and those agreements, really, with the tribes, that there wasn't all of these parameters that they needed to parameters and also expectations of them. Again, we want to honor sovereignty and self-determination. And so, you know, if you want to be a part of our project, that means what you choose to research is going to be, you know, you have that freedom to do that. And we're not going to be imposing this urgency culture on people. Like, we want to make sure that we take the time that this project needs to take. And, you know, I liked to talk about this project as, you know, we're taking cues from the land. So, like, how does the land work? How do, you know, what is the conditions that create a vibrant ecosystem? The university, as it stands right now, you know, is not conducive to, you know, a lot of people showing up in different ways. So we wanted to do something different. We wanted to make sure that, you know, people are honored with the expertise and knowledge that they bring. And, you know, everyone has gifts and talents, and we want to be able to showcase those. Also, you know, make sure that we're adequately compensating people for their time and their labor during our project. So again, we made sure that was written right into the grant, that this would be subgranted to all of the tribes, to make sure that we're not just asking people to give and to, you know, the university yet again comes out and then takes more, grabs more, but we're saying, how do we walk into this project in a reciprocal, with reciprocity and with humility? So yeah, those were a couple of high notes about how we were able to approach this.
Those are big ways that are not aligned with, like, typical colonial capitalist subtler ways of researching. So I think that's really great.
Thank you.
And I wrote down, what conditions create a vibrant ecosystem? Like, how can we apply this to our work? I think that's really smart.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this project is about land. Right. So the land had been grabbed and had been stewarded by the university, and it had been looked at as something that was of value and, again, commodified. How do we think about our own teachings and flip that script for people? How do we, you know, we as Indigenous people, we have been excellent stewards of this land for such a long time and before that disruption. And so we want to make sure that we're acting in a way with more reverence and more honor.
Misty, this has been great. So fun to hear from you, and really important work. So I appreciate what you're sharing with the community.
Thank you so much for the time and opportunity. It's been great to talk to you and to be able to, I think, get into some of the deeper points of our project. Sometimes, you know, the interviews are shorter and they want the sound bite. So this has been good. I appreciate y'all for telling our story.
So you can check out various links to the Truth Project on minnesotanativenews.org. And there you will also see a statement issued from the University of Minnesota.